I went to open up my notes for the movie. Mm-hmm. And I just have my karaoke song ideas.
I can't.
I added Iris today.
Oh, yes.
And I don't want the world to see me.
Because I don't think that they'd understand.
Bum, bum. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Ride Home Podcast. My name is Abby.
Hey, guys, it's Caitlin.
I cannot begin to describe to you the absolute speed in which Caitlin demolished the book version of the movie that we saw because you wanted to come prepared for It Ends With Us.
I did.
What was the little book experience like for you?
So here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Before I made the decision that I wanted to be prepared and read the book before the movie, I decided I just wanted to like know what the plot was.
Uh-huh.
So I read the SparkNotes version, which was quite a trip. So I encourage everyone to look that up. But after I read the SparkNotes version, I was like, now I kind of want to read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened that a copy of It Ends With Us was sitting on our bookshelf.
How did it come to be?
I think my mom gave it to me a long time ago. Uh-huh. So like my mom and I like trade books.
I'm sure she read it.
She definitely read it like a long time ago. Because I think it came out in 2016, the book did.
Mm.
Anyways, I found a little copy. I read it in like 2 days.
Literally.
I don't think Colleen Hoover is a good writer.
I think that's pretty obvious. I mean, maybe people like her stories, yeah, but I think the prose is where it's hurting to the point that it's like kind of bad.
It feels like it's supposed to be like a YA novel, but it isn't. The audience is for grown adult women.
Very adult content also.
Very adult content. So I'm not really sure what's going on with Colleen Hoover. She is fucking killing it, though.
I don't know if Colleen Hoover knows what's going on with Colleen Hoover, because I don't think the lights are on upstairs. Mm-mm. Like, anytime I've ever seen a picture of her or an interview with her, it's like the most blank stare. There's like no light behind her eyes.
No. If I might, just to like kick things off before we get into the movie.
Yeah.
While I was reading the book, I took a couple notes of some of my most favorite, aka what I think are quite possibly some of the most cringeworthy sentences I have ever read. This is an actual sentence in a book.
Mm-hmm.
When he was wiping that cow shit on me, it was quite possibly the most turned on I have ever been.
What?
When he was wiping that cow shit on me, it was the most turned on I've ever been.
Is Colleen Hoover okay?
I don't like, think.
Here's the thing is that like authors like this make me think like I should write a book.
Literally, like I could write a book. Like, anyone
can write a book. I feel like, I don't know, like some parts of, we're getting really off the topic of movies, but I feel like some literature these days, it's like novels are being published that should really just be like on somebody's blog.
Yeah.
You know,
like it's a Tumblr post.
It's a Tumblr post that got published. And I feel like maybe because our generation grew up reading Tumblr posts that we're like okay with it.
I'm not okay with it. It's so interesting. So what an interesting experience. So I think Colleen Hoover has a very niche audience of very, very super fans.
It's giving the Taylor Swift.
I was going to say, I wasn't going to say.
Why
it.
Am I saying literature? Literature?
Literature? Literature. Yeah, that's how you say
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Okay. I felt like I was being like hoity.
I was going to say it, but it does seem, I'm not saying like it's like a cause and effect type of thing, but there does seem to be a direct correlation between Swifties and people who like Colleen Hoover. I'm just saying, it seems to be some correlation.
You did take statistics in college.
I took probability and statistics in undergrad and in graduate school. So
that being said, I feel like it is time to actually get into the movie version, the adaptation.
Correct.
First of all, there is a lot of behind the scenes drama that we get to talk about.
Yeah. it.
I want to start diving into our review and we can mm-hmm. unpack a little bit more of that later. But there are some juicy details.
There's a lot going on. A
lot going on behind the scenes between the director and star Justin Baldoni and Blake Lively, mm-hmm. who is the mm-hmm. star, maybe wanted to be the director. But anyway, we'll get into that more. But could you give us a quick plot and cast list so that we can jump into It Ends With Us, the movie?
I would love to. Lily Bloom moves to Boston to chase her lifelong dream of opening her own business. A chance meeting with charming neurosurgeon Ryle Kincaid soon sparks an intense connection. But as the two fall deeply in love, she begins to see sides of Ryle that remind her of her parents' relationship. When Lily's first love, Atlas Corrigan, suddenly re-enters her life, her relationship with Ryle gets upended, leaving her with an impossible choice. And this movie stars Justin Baldoni, who is also the director, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. Blake Lively, Brandon Sklenar, Isabella Ferrer, Jenny Slate, Hasan Minhaj, and Alex Neustadter. Sorry if I mispronounced that.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably like close, pretty close enough.
Yep.
So since you are really, like, really fresh off the book, like, as fresh as a person could be, basically, mm-hmm. I want to know your initial reactions, because obviously you went into this with a little bit of a different background than I mm-hmm. did. So you knew kind of what you were getting into.
Yes.
What are your thoughts and feelings about It Ends With Us, the movie version?
I don't think it was a good movie. Mm-hmm. I'll just start with that. However, I kind of liked it.
Uh-huh.
But I honestly feel like, because I read the book, I really struggle with, like, a movie adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you read a book, you, like, think of what the characters look like and you kind of, like, create them uh-huh. in your head. And then when it's on, you know, being portrayed in a movie, it almost never equates yeah. to what you had in your head.
Which is funny, because literally one of my favorite parts of seeing this movie with you was the first scene that Atlas is on screen. You went, that is not what Atlas is supposed to look like. Like, you were like yeah. a super fan.
I was
you
like
were so angry about
it's
it.
It's so funny how much, like, even though I didn't even really think the book was good, I am going to venture to say that I think the book did a better job of portraying domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
than the movie did. I've seen people who have said that they think the book glamorizes domestic violence, but I honestly think the movie actually glamorized domestic violence.
Mm.
And I think they completely glossed over it.
Yeah.
And to me, that is the thing that bothered me the most about the movie, because I think the book actually did a pretty good job of building Ryle's character, and, like, he was pretty much a red flag from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like we got that in the movie at
no,
all.
No.
In the book, just for you, like, he kind of, like, stalks her.
Ah.
Like, there's things that they didn't do in the movie that I feel like they could have done to portray. Because uh-huh. I know, here's the thing. A movie adaptation, it's a condensed version. You're never going to get all of the details and pieces of the puzzle like you do in right. a book. I get that. But I feel like they just didn't create the characters and develop the characters well in the movie at all.
I will say that Ryle's character, when it turned mm-hmm. to domestic violence, it really did come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because he seemed like such a soft, gentle soul.
Yeah.
Like, very caring. And, like, even the first scene when he comes up on the rooftop and he kicks a chair over. I'm sorry, but, like, I would kick a chair over if I lost a 6-year-old boy on my surgery table.
100%.
And smoke a cigarette on my rooftop. Like,
yes.
100%. So even that didn't feel like a red flag to
no.
me. And so his character, first of all, like, Justin Baldoni as a person is obviously very pretty to look at, but mm-hmm. I think he himself, like, I think he could have chemistry with, like, a Mazda. Like,
yeah,
he,
literally, yeah.
Like, he could have chemistry with a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really do get, like, enamored by him.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like maybe they were trying to go for, like, anyone can be an abuser.
Sure.
But I feel like the way people present themselves to the public
mm-hmm.
can show, like, can be like, you know, I'm this perfect angel, I'm this doctor, I'm this rich man. But in private, I think that's where people always get to see those red flags.
Yes.
And we had so many private scenes with him before the domestic violence happened that mm-hmm. I felt like we could have gotten more red flags.
See, that's what I'm saying. I feel like it was such a missed opportunity. I think overall, it did a pretty good job of like lining up with the book. There were definitely things that I was like, well, that's not how it happened.
Uh-huh.
Which leads me to my point of this movie really glossing over the whole DV stuff.
I don't know. It didn't really feel like, I don't know how to explain it, but it didn't feel like this movie had a plot.
No.
Like, it just kind of felt like we were meandering with a really awkward Blake Lively for approximately 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it was like Justin Baldoni being charming as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, like, domestic violence. Like, mm-hmm. it was just like suddenly we're there.
And no, like, motivation for why he's hitting her.
No.
Like, there was no, like, cues along the way that he had anger issues or that, like, he was insecure or, like, I mean, right. there was a little bit of, like, the insecurity stuff hinted along the way.
The initial buildup of Ryle's character just didn't do the second half of the movie justice. And mm-hmm. the first half of the movie I felt like was what Blake Lively wanted it to be, which was like a cute summer romance.
Yeah.
Let me do my little florist shop
and my little outfit
and have little silly moments with Jenny Slate.
Yeah.
Blake Lively in this movie reminded me a lot of Sydney Sweeney in Anyone But You.
Yeah.
Like trying so hard to be the cool girl, trying yeah. so hard to be like cutesy and demure.
very
cutesy. Kind of like aloof almost, but like.
But in like a pick me way.
Yeah.
Like aloof to like. Be like, I'm one of the boys. Like, you know what I yeah. mean? Like, it's like you're trying too hard.
Uh-huh. And nothing about Blake Lively's character was likable to me.
It was like,
or believable.
It was like a vacant person.
Yeah. And it was interesting because like, I actually kind of liked the younger version of her. Like yeah. I liked that actress.
I liked her too.
I will say that Blake Lively wasn't necessarily like an F grade for like her acting performance. I feel like, unfortunately, to like, you know, trigger warning here, unfortunately, the scene where he like sexually assaults her is mm-hmm. probably like her best performance in the yeah. movie. Like that was yeah. a very hard scene to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very believable scene. And, you know, I felt like you were witnessing something real, which was obviously terrifying to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But like having that scene where she was able to deliver a performance like that, but then like in the same movie as her doing like a cutesy montage with Jenny Slate building mm-hmm. a flower shop together,
mm-hmm.
tonally it didn't work.
No.
Visually it didn't work. Mm-mm. Like half of the movie was very bright, very floral, very, you know, kind of like romancy and we're in the city and we're falling in love.
Yeah.
And then the other half was really, really, really heavy themes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, what movie do you want to be? Like, do you want to be a drama about domestic violence or do you want to be a romance? And it yeah. felt like you could almost see the conflict.
I was just about to say, it's almost like you could feel
yeah.
the push-pull yep. between Blake Lively and Justin Baldoni.
And that's where we get to the drama that is unfolding, which is basically... Boy. You know, if you go on TikTok, you're going to find a lot of deep dives that we don't have to cover everything. You can
sure.
find it all out for yourself. But basically, the general story is that everyone is kind of noticing that on this press tour, Justin Baldoni is doing his thing and mm-hmm. the rest of the cast and Blake Lively are doing their thing.
And Ryan Reynolds also, who isn't even in the movie. But okay.
But apparently decided he was going to write scenes
yeah.
for it.
What?
Which he did, apparently, I saw this, he did it during the writer's strike because
what?
he's not in the guild. He's not in the writer's guild. And so basically he like crossed the picket line and was writing scenes behind.
See, I don't like that.
See, and that's the thing is like you and I can clock character.
100. Mm-hmm.
Like every time a celebrity, like, it comes out that they're not a good person, you and I are just like, yeah, of course they aren't.
We could have told you that.
And I've never really had, like, a full-blown Blake Lively is, like, a red flag. But Ryan Reynolds has always been a red flag
for me. I've never liked him.
Always been a red flag. And honestly speaking, like, I apologize to the Swifties out there. Taylor Swift is a red flag. And if you are in her inner circle, I automatically place you as a red flag.
Yeah.
And her and Blake Lively having this little thing. But it's interesting because now during the press tour, Blake Lively kind of has her little posse, which is like Colleen Hoover and the rest of the, you know, group. And then Justin Baldoni is over here by himself. But if you watch the interviews with Justin Baldoni, he's like, you know, this movie is for women. This is for survivors. Like, this isn't about me. This is a much bigger topic.
He's using it as a platform to raise awareness for domestic violence and to kind of give survivors a voice and to make them feel seen and heard.
And then Blake Lively, on the other hand, bring your florals.
She's using it as an opportunity to market her brand, her hairline, and to, like, basically talk about herself.
Yeah.
Every interview I've seen of her is, like, talking about her own sense of style and how she embedded that into the character and how this is, like, a fun romantic movie and to wear your, bring your friends and wear your florals. And, like, the tone, again, the tone is, like, Justin Baldoni being very sincere and genuine.
Yeah. In one of those interviews with Blake Lively, she said something like, I can't act in a movie unless I'm producing it. Which, first of all,
hashtag narcissist, hashtag control issues.
Also, look at your own IMDb list. It's funny because, like, I think she's just so pretty and so famous and so, you know, entrenched in this, like, bubble of, like, Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively. Like, they're almost like our Brad and Angelina of today. That people, like, have inflated her to this pedestal of being an A-list celebrity. But if you look at her IMDb, it's garbage, 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 and Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
It's very mediocre.
It's material.
Yeah.
And so I feel like for her to be on this, like, incredible high horse just kind of proves what you and I have been thinking, where it's just like, you two are these very mediocre people who have pulled the wool over everybody's eyes and have convinced us that you're, like, geniuses. I think they wanted to Barbenheimer. It ends with us in Deadpool. And I think the way that they did this, like, joint press tour almost, where, like, he was even doing interviews for It Ends With Us.
Yes.
In their weird conflated brains, they, I think they literally thought that they were going to, like, create a Barbenheimer, like, part two. With a movie about domestic violence.
Which is so sick to me. Like, it's just like, and here's the thing, like, I dabbled in Gossip Girl back in the day, was obsessed with Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants because I read all the books and, like,
and that's a great movie.
It's a great movie. I never really saw Blake Lively as problematic. I always saw Ryan Reynolds as problematic, but them together, it just feels like it's giving toxic, it's giving, like, nepotism, it's giving this weird, like, we're taking over everything.
You know what it feels like? It feels like a TikTok couple. Like, you know, couples who own, like, accounts together that are like, look at our relationship. We're so cute. We're so fun. Like, it's giving. It's
very performative.
Like, it's almost like their mission in life is to perform their marriage for everybody else. Like,
And you know what? I'm sorry. I see through it. It's bullshit. And it's not genuine. And I think it's concerning that they have been allowed to have this much power in Hollywood. And I don't, I mean, I really don't know them personally, obviously, but I just, it's just giving uncomfortable bad vibes.
And I will say that if you just even, like, browse TikTok for a second, we're not really Instagram Reels people, but it's probably on there too. But if you're just, like, on TikTok for a second, like, the rest of the internet is on board with us right now. Like,
there's a lot of evidence out there to prove this.
And also, people are, like, digging up old shit about Blake Lively, which is very interesting.
There's a lot coming out. Also, if you aren't on TikTok or don't care to like do all of that, literally just look at Justin Baldoni's Instagram page and look at Blake Lively's Instagram page. Mm-hmm. Look at each of their past 10 posts.
Yeah.
Look at each of their Instagram biographies and mm-hmm. their little pages.
Yeah.
That's all. Just take a little peek.
I will
it
also
speaks for it fucking self.
Right. I will also say that in comparison to like Blake Lively and Justin Baldoni is that I actually think that Justin Baldoni was really good.
Okay,
in this movie.
Same. I thought he did a really good job.
I thought he did a really good job in the scenes where like he was interrogating her about her boyfriend. Like mm-hmm. I was scared of him.
Yeah.
Like I was like, oh my God, like he's terrifying.
Yeah.
And in the scenes where he's supposed to be romantic and charming, he was like, I was falling in love with him.
Uh-huh.
And it was almost to the point that he did such a good job with his character that when Atlas came around, I literally was just like, why would you even look at Atlas when Justin Baldoni uh-huh. is in front of you?
Yeah.
And I know that Atlas is supposed to be like, I'm sure in the book version is supposed to be like the hero and the man and the one that like women yes. want. But in the book, I was like, oh my, or in the movie, I was like, oh my God, like this guy is so attractive. Mm-hmm. And my favorite is you going, he's got a nice little rump on.
He has such a nice ass. Like he is doing leg and glutes mm-hmm. galore.
He looks great in scrubs.
He looked great in scrubs, which is funny because in the book, they it's so stupid. Like just all of like the things of like what's her name? Lily's character, like thinks.
Lily Blossom Bloom.
Lily Blossom Bloom. Yeah. In the book, that's also her name. And I cringed. The names that Colleen Hoover picks for her characters is like what girls pick for like their Barbies when they're little. Like you just make up like these like random like tchotchke names.
Atlas Corrigan.
Yes, it's so bad.
What was Ryle's last name?
Kincaid.
Ryle Kincaid.
I know.
Like all the men sound like quarterbacks from like Remember the Titans.
Yes.
And Lily Blossom Bloom is actually the worst name I've ever
it's so
heard.
Stupid.
And I really did not appreciate that they were like trying to make fun of the name in the movie, which uh-huh. they probably do in the book too.
Yeah,
where it's like,
little.
Yeah, it's such a silly name. It's like you could have just not had that be her name. Also, it had nothing to do with
I was gonna
the,
say,
the
also,
rest of the plot.
Why did you develop a character whose name is Lily Blossom Bloom and she's obsessed with gardening and flowers? Like, really? She could have just had a regular name and liked flowers and plants.
Yeah.
Her name didn't have to be Lily Blossom Bloom. Mm-mm. It's just so dumbed down.
Yeah.
To quote NPR's take on it, her writing, sophomoric.
Yeah.
And it's just painful. But anyways, I don't know. I think the movie just was a big old flop. Mm-hmm. And I think Justin Baldoni's challenge in this movie was like he brought a lot more depth.
Yeah.
And I could sometimes almost like feel him like trying to pull him, mm-hmm. her into that with him. And she just wasn't giving it.
She
like you said, the only time you really saw that was in that one scene.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that that's the only time we saw her get to the same level of depth
yeah.
that he was at.
I think what happened to just from like a production standpoint is that Justin Baldoni in all of his interviews and also in just behind the scenes footage that I've seen, he has made it very clear that like he is a man and mm-hmm. he wanted to bring a female perspective into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like the way I'm reading it is that he basically trusted Blake Lively a little too much.
Yeah.
And he wanted her to kind of give that like female gaze.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted her to guide some of those scenes that like he didn't as a man feel comfortable directing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like she just took that and ran with it. And it
yeah.
turned the movie into this really unbalanced disaster. Again, we were watching two different movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I mean, it was kind of interesting to watch because you could almost see the scenes that like, it was like you could see the scenes that were Justin and you could uh-huh. see the scenes that were Blake.
Yeah.
And I feel like you can't usually like
pick
that out because, you know, usually it's just one director.
It's more cohesive.
And one... You know, everybody's marching to the same beat. And it yeah. was very clear that they were not marching to the same beat. I felt like the only character in literally the entire movie that had any depth or development was Ryle. And unfortunately, like, even his character wasn't developed. Like, we talked about before where,
yeah.
like, we didn't see the red flags that, you should have seen in mm-hmm. order to build the momentum to go into the second act. And I feel like just every other character, like Jenny Slate's character, Atlas's character, Blake Lively's character, her mom's character, everybody was just the most flat, kind of basic, almost like mold that you see in every...
thinking of like a paper doll. Like they were just kind of like... a cutout, like a cardboard cutout of a character.
It almost felt like AI made a movie.
Yeah.
Maybe Colleen Hoover chucks her ideas into ChatGPT.
Dude, what if she did?
She might.
She could.
She probably goes, what is a character name for a florist? And it was like Lily Blossom Bloom.
Oh my God. Speaking of Colleen Hoover, remember?
The Colleen Hoover jump scare?
The Colleen Hoover jump scare?
Yes.
She just like was at that party scene and I just went, Colleen Hoover? Like, and she was just like dead-eyed in the camera. Like,
but it was weird because like her eyes are so strange that it was almost like one of her eyes was looking at the camera.
She always kind of looks like one eye's going in a different direction.
And
than
I
the
think
other
that
one.
Eye like wandered over to the, to the camera.
It was tracking the camera as it panned.
It was almost like, I don't know how to explain it, but when it cut to her, it was almost like she was like, I'm Colleen Hoover. Like,
yeah. Oh my God, it was so bizarre.
Maybe there could be like a haunted house this year where it's just Colleen Hoover around every corner.
That would be scary, actually.
I actually wouldn't go into that haunted
No,
house.
I think I would pass, honestly.
That's Mm-mm. terrifying. I'm telling you, Colleen Hoover has some screws loose upstairs.
But I'll tell you what, she really has a hold on these gals. Because when I left to go to the bathroom, mm-hmm. I don't know if you witnessed any of this. As I'm walking out of the theater, I hear like rapid footsteps behind me. This woman ran to the bathroom, peed, very quickly washed her hands, didn't dry them, ran out of the bathroom so she wouldn't miss the movie. Like,
she was locked in.
That's how dedicated these people are to this.
I will say it was precious that it was like an entire theater of book clubs. Like, yeah. It was like us and a bunch of book clubs.
Yeah.
And it was really cute. So I think we were ready to give our popcorn uh-huh. scores. I will say that, like, I don't really have any other notes about this movie. The cinematography was lackluster. The music was almost non-existent. The set design, I will say, like, there were some cool sets. Like, her flower shop was mm-hmm. really pretty.
Yeah.
But overall, I feel like everything about this movie was so muted and so, I'm gonna use the word that NPR used, like sophomoric. Like, it just felt mm-hmm. really basic. And I don't know if that is, you know, Justin Baldoni might not be a director. I don't know if it's that or if right. it's, you know, the conflicts that we talked about before, or if it's literally just the material that they were
given
adapting
yeah
is that way. But obviously it's a small popcorn for me, and I will never see this movie again for
no,
sure.
No, yeah, it's a small for me as well. I just feel like it did not accomplish telling a survivor of domestic violence's story, which is what it was trying, well, allegedly, that's what Justin Baldoni was trying to do. Unfortunately, I don't think he was really given full reins mm-hmm. to do that. And I'm curious if he was, how much different this movie could have played out. Honestly, I'm going to say it, if Blake Lively wasn't in this movie, how much differently this could have played out.
Just that one cast change probably could have been almost a different movie.
That's what I mean. Yeah. I think it really could have been. And I think it's so unfortunate because domestic violence is so, so, so misunderstood and so misinterpreted and so misrepresented in media. And it's just like, here we go, another misrepresentation of what it means to be in a relationship that involves domestic violence mm-hmm. and what it means to be someone who gets out of a relationship like that. And I just feel like it's a disservice
yeah.
to survivors and victims of domestic violence.
Mm-hmm. I am also going to make a quick note that the script, which I don't know if it was like dialogue pulled from the book
mm-hmm.
or if it was written by whoever adapted the script, but there were some lines in this movie that were so awful mm-hmm. that I wasn't sure if they were trying to make a joke or not.
No, that's how the book is. That's how the whole book is.
And there was
actually
the one scene that stands out in particular is when they first meet on the rooftop. Uh-huh. And like right after you'd like just kicked this chair over and like she's sitting on the edge looking at the city. And it's like just after her like father's funeral that she walked out of. He looks at her and she just goes like a fucking like 4 year old kid. You know, when like 4 year olds tell you something that like has nothing to do yes. with like what's going on, mm-hmm. like you'll look at a 4 year old while you're eating dinner and they're like, do you know that dinosaurs roamed the earth for 75 million years?
Yeah.
She looked at him and goes, did you know that maraschino cherries don't digest in your system?
I will say that was not in the book.
And what the fuck that was that?
Weird. That was so weird.
There was no mention of a cherry.
No.
There was no, like, it literally was just like, that's how she started the conversation.
It was so bizarre.
Did you know that maraschino cherries?
She was literally like, do you know that maraschino cherries, like, stay in your stomach or digestive system for 7 years or give you cancer? I can't remember which one. Okay. Nobody asked. Literally not one single solitary person in this movie asked you to speak about that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on another episode. I will say the most positive thing about this theater experience was the trailers are out of control for this fall and this winter. There were so many trailers that it was just like, that's a must see.
It was like
that's
a must see after banger.
That's a must see. And I'm just really excited for the fall and the winter and to get into like the actual like meat and potatoes, like award season type movies. Cause I'm a little over summer garbage.
Yeah.
Like I'm done with the summer garbage.
Yeah. I'm ready to move on.
Summer garbage can be fun. Mm-hmm. I get it. But
we're going from brat summer to demure fall.
Yes. Very cutesy.
Very respectful.
Very demure. We'll see you next time, everyone.
Thanks for joining us on the ride home.